This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Daily Digest. On the bigger picture, you're with Juliet Jacobs, Lim Soo Ann, and Dashran Johan. So two stories for you today. In our first one, two young Malaysian law students have started a group called Women for Refugees to teach refugee women how to read and write. So we're going to speak to the co-founder of the group to find out what inspired them to launch this initiative and how they were forced to change their teaching methods because of the latest CMCO.
And in our second story, our memory might be another aspect of our lives that's taking a hit from the COVID-19 pandemic. So if you found that you've been forgetting things, whether it's, you know, forgetting to buy something on your grocery list or to complete a task that you were assigned, you might not be alone in this. So we'll take a look at how lockdowns and isolation could be affecting memories and forgetfulness.
That's right. And on that note, we do have a poll running on our Twitter page at BFM Radio. And we are asking you, how do you prevent yourself from forgetting? Prevent yourself from forgetting to complete a task. So your three options are write it down, set reminders, and I have good memory. So you can keep sending your, take the poll over on our Twitter page at BFM Radio. You can alternatively also send us your thoughts at WhatsApp at 018-789-8899.
That's right. We're going to find out more about that a bit later in the hour. But now in our first story, it was back in September when two law students, Davina Devarajan and Arissa Jemima Ikram Ismail, decided to start an initiative to empower illiterate migrant and refugee women to integrate into local communities. So under their Women for Refugees initiative, the duo recruited teachers via Instagram. Now they have about 20 volunteers providing weekly two-hour literacy classes in English and Malay in a sort of rundown two-story block that houses over 50 families. So Women for Refugees isn't the first group in the country to offer literacy courses, of course. And these, of course, are for refugees in Malaysia. But what makes them unique is their decision to focus specifically on women.
Mm. And to give you some context, there are close to 180,000 refugees and asylum seekers in Malaysia that are registered with the United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR. So many NGOs estimate that there are tens of thousands more that are awaiting UNHCR appointments. Unfortunately, Malaysia is not a signatory to the UN Refugee Convention and classifies refugees as illegal immigrants. So this makes it incredibly difficult for refugees in Malaysia to get access to formal education and to even work legally.
Mm. And so classes like the ones offered by Women for Refugees are incredibly important to help refugees achieve some level of independence. So according to the Associated Press, Shahida, her mother of two from Myanmar who has been taking classes from Women for Refugees, said that she's doing so to prepare for a new life abroad. She has been called for multiple interviews, but there haven't been any updates on her resettlement amid the COVID-19 pandemic. And she said that, and I quote, English is important for us. When we go overseas, we will need English.
Yeah, but it's not every migrant or refugee hopes to learn English for the purpose of, you know, resettling somewhere else. So take 54-year-old Rohingya refugee Zaleha Abdul, for example. So according to that same Associated Press report that we quoted earlier, many like Zaleha said that she simply wants to be more independent when going shopping or getting around the city. And many are hoping that these classes will help them to be more than just passive wives.
Yeah, but unfortunately, classes have been put on hold since mid-October due to the later CMCO. So we thought we'd get in touch with the good folks from Women for Refugees to talk to us about what inspired them to start this initiative, as well as how they've been conducting classes in recent weeks. So joining us on the line right now is Davina Devarajan, co-founder of Women for Refugees. Welcome to the show, Davina. Perhaps you can start with what inspired you and your partner to launch Women for Refugees and these classes.
Thank you so much for having me. So me and my partner, Arissa, we've always been interested in working on the issue of marginalization, especially on refugee rights, when we realized that there were no proper paperwork or framework that legally recognized them in Malaysia. So initially, we were volunteering with other NGOs such as KAKA and MRA, and we ended up in this community that we're working with currently. And we were approached by the community leader who explained that he had a group of women who didn't have an avenue to do much outside of cleaning their homes and taking care of their kids. And we saw a lot of potential in them. And we thought that this is an amazing opportunity to come in with a program that could really change that. So initially we came in, when we started our program, we focused on teaching them literacy skills because very specifically so that they could become self-sustainable. And what I mean by that is that oftentimes refugees have to go to hospitals, police station, government offices, they'll be equipped with the literacy skills to be able to handle themselves, like talking to officers or signing forms. But after a while, we realized that these women also wanted to become more financially self-sustaining. So we broadened our framework to not only include literacy classes, but to some extent, business training as well, such as teaching them to utilize skills, generate income, calculating cost of products, things that they would need to know to engage in some sort of income building activity. So basically what we focus on at WFR is that we want to empower and upskill refugee women so that they become more self-sustaining and are able to engage themselves in both community and income building initiatives.
And can you describe what the reality is in Malaysia as far as refugees' access to education is concerned?
Okay, so the reality in Malaysia is that Malaysia never ratified the UN 1951 Refugee Convention. This is a convention that's supposed to recognize their rights to things like education and work and all these things. And we also don't have any other framework that legally recognizes them. So the closest thing that you can get to paperwork is to be registered under UNHCR, which could take up to 6 years. And being registered does not necessarily indicate that you are legal in Malaysia. You still don't have rights to education or labor. At most, the UN has signed an MOU with the Ministry of Health to give refugees a 50% discount at government hospitals on already expat prices. So even with discounted medical care, it's still quite unaffordable to them. So that is the reality of what life is like for them here. And I think that the problem with not recognizing them is that they are still here in our country and part of our communities and shaping our societies every day. But without a framework for them to operate within, we are leaving such a large pool untapped and unaccounted for. So usually when people ask me the question of, okay, why focus on refugee rights, or why should I focus on refugee rights? I try not to make the human rights argument as much because I don't believe that we are disagreeing on anyone's right to basic human needs. I think the real problem is that if you're a Malaysian and already feeling like a second-class citizen in your own country due to various factors, recognizing foreign rights can feel like a threat to your safety and your prosperity. So the fear is dangerous, but to some extent valid. And I guess at WFR, what we realize is that the real question is how can we communicate that the pie is in fact big enough for all of us, and even more by investing in refugees and migrants and giving them proper rights and proper frameworks, we're also increasing that pie, not just for them, but for all of us as well.
So Davina, how do you communicate that the pie is big enough for all of us?
So I think things like why we focus on also helping them generate income is because that is one of the concerns, is how can we help them, contribute to our economy? So in refugee households, if they do not have a proper right, they are often forced into jobs where they can be taken advantage of. And also they don't have much spending power because they're not earning enough. But when you increase their ability to spend, they are now actively communicating, actively contributing to our economy. And that increases, for example, our GDP. That helps everybody as a whole. So things like this play a factor.
So why did you decide to teach women specifically?
A very interesting question. Okay, so because we found that, like you said, a lot of NGOs or organizations, they focus on refugees as a whole. But it is very difficult to tackle, especially community-based problems, when it is so varied like that. So we realized that by niching it down to women, we really got to understand what are women's needs within the refugee community. And why this was so beautiful, we found, was that by limiting the classes to the women, because, for example, in refugee communities, men have slightly more access to work because the kind of work you can get are often very labor-intensive. The women don't have opportunities to get jobs like this, so they're often stuck at home. But when we run these classes and we put a group of women together in a class to learn, to empower themselves, it reshaped their minds. From the women that we had who came in that were more quiet, they were constantly at home just taking care of their kids, now they had a place to come to every single week to speak to women like them who understood problems like them, to brainstorm together how can they become more financially independent, what leadership opportunities can they take up in their communities. So this is how we found that we had a lot more growth, we had a lot more success because we niched it down enough to tackle the nuanced problems that they were facing.
And apart from finding jobs, Davina, why is it important for refugees in Malaysia to learn English and Bahasa Malaysia?
Yeah, so for example, you know, one of the things that they have to do to have some sort of recognition, which is not even entirely legal yet, was the UNHCR card that I mentioned. And to get something like that, for example, you have to go through a long interview process, so many checkpoints. The same goes for when they do want to migrate to another country, because oftentimes Malaysia only acts as like a pit stop country. They tend to want to go somewhere else after, but they struggle because they don't have the literacy skills to be able to communicate effectively to get a place there. So these skills are also important in that sense because it speeds up the process. And they are able to effectively communicate exactly where they are at that point of time, in terms of, you know, their financially, what aid they need, and what they need to get done for them to be able to emigrate later on. And also the basic things that I did touch on, is that the day-to-day things and like how can they go through life, if they're constantly relying on locals to communicate things. It's very difficult. But if they can do it for themselves, it not only empowers them, but it shows Malaysians as well that they are not a burden to us. They are able to stand on their two feet when we give them the opportunity to.
You know, in some other interviews, your partner Arissa mentioned, and I'm quoting her here, that it was very essential for us to not pitch the refugee women as a charity where they are constantly requiring external aid. Why was that important? You know, why was it important for you to not pitch this as a charity?
Yeah, so I think this is like one of our mottos at WFR, is that we do not look at our women at all as charity cases. They are basically our stakeholders. They buy into us just as much as we buy into them. So it's not that they should ever feel lucky that we come in. We come in because they trust that we are here to serve them and help them become far more self-sustaining. So what we mean by that is that when we treat them with that kind of respect, they see the value in the project that we are trying to run with them. And we want this mindset to be a ripple effect and for people to kind of be able to adopt it. So, what I mean by that is that instead of looking at refugees as charity cases, I come in and I give you everything that you need and now you are reliant on us. We want to give them with as many skills as they need, with all the tools that they need, so that they can show themselves and everyone else that they are self-sustained. I repeat that word so many times because I think it's so important. It's so easy to get lost in transition and think that they will forever be dependent on us. The problem is they are only dependent on us because they're not afforded the rights that they need. So that's what we try to emphasize at WFR, that they are actually far more capable. We just have to give them the opportunity to prove it.
And Davina, did the latest implementation of the CMCO in the Klang Valley affect your classes?
So, okay. This definitely was a major challenge because we started off with physical classes and we found that they were super effective. But when CMCO started, we couldn't go to the communities anymore. So we had to very quickly revamp how we were running our program. So from doing things physically, we instead turned all of our materials online. We got a lot of donations to give them the technical needs, for example, laptops, mics, webcams. We transferred all of our programs into visuals. So we turned them into videos and we created worksheets, for example. And there's a WhatsApp group, so they're constantly in communication with us. They're asking us questions. They're letting us know what they've done in the worksheets. They're going through the videos. And we have volunteers who sit in the classes and play the videos, go through the worksheets with them, kind of monitoring the classes. So if they have questions, they have someone to bounce it off. So despite it being a challenge and it having to force us to revamp it, I think this was actually a good thing because it's gotten us to think about how can we get our substance, how can we get our whole program and make it far more concise so that we can replicate it elsewhere if we cannot be in these places physically. So when everything's online, the only thing we have to do is think about equipping other communities with technical needs, but we already have the framework online that it can be run anywhere.
So what's next for women for refugees? You know, are you planning to expand your classes to include more subjects or start teaching refugees outside the Klang Valley perhaps?
So as you said, right now we have most of our focus on literacy, but we're already building a whole framework to teach them business training. So how our program functions is that we have three phases. The first phase is the literacy classes. The second phase are business training, things that they would need to know to generate income, basically. And third phase is we help them implement it, depending on the ideas that they come up with within phase two. So our long-term plan is to be able to solidify all three phases so that they graduate from the phase, able to now financially become self-sustaining. And what we also want to do is we want to finalize this framework and ensure that it is effective enough so that we can duplicate that in as many refugee communities as possible. And what we hope is that by doing this, we now empower the different communities to be able to stand on their own two feet. And this helps reshape the narrative that some of us might have looking at the refugee community. We might assume that, you know, they're going to constantly be depending on us. They're going to be taking from the pool and that we might have nothing left. And we want to show them that that's not the case. That when you invest in them and you give them the opportunity to learn and to do things that help themselves, they're going to be able to stand on their feet. They're going to be able to contribute to our economy and generally shape our society for the better.
Thank you so much, Davina. That was Davina Devarajan talking to us about her new initiative, Women for Refugees, which she co-founded and sort of telling us how the organization has had to adapt during this latest CMCO.
Yes, and it's really great that although Malaysia classifies refugees as illegal immigrants, that there are many who have taken the initiative to work with these refugees and provide them with classes that will hopefully help them have some form of independence in the country or, you know, get them ready to relocate abroad, especially the women, because who, as Davina mentioned earlier, have way fewer opportunities to work in the informal sector than men.
Yeah, and you know, if you'd like to keep up to date with all the work done by Women for Refugees, or maybe, you know, you'd like to volunteer yourself, you can follow them on Instagram and Twitter at Women for Refugees.
That's right. And if you have any thoughts that you'd like to share with us about Women for Refugees or anything that we're discussing today, you can always tweet us at BFM Radio, or you can send us a WhatsApp message at 018-789-8899. And, you know, speaking of good initiatives, you know, this month here on BFM, we're actually highlighting men's health issues in conjunction with Movember. And just a little bit later today at 4 p.m, we'll actually be discussing the importance of research and improving outcomes for prostate and other urological cancers. And we're also going to find out what kind of research Malaysia has produced and what challenges lie ahead. And that's with Professor Dr. Ng Chuk Jen, the Deputy Dean of Research from the Faculty of Medicine at the University of Malaya, and also Professor Dr. Ong Teng Ike, who is a consultant urologist from the University of Malaya Medical Center. So don't forget to tune in at 4 p.m. for that on our Health and Living segment. So now we're going to take a quick break, but we're going to leave you with the new Seeker and I'd Like to Teach the World to Sing. But stay tuned. You're tuned to the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.